special thanks to Dennis Moynihan, Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
WEFT Champaign-Urbana listener-sponsored volunteer-operated radio. This hour programming is brought to you by you, the listener, thank you very much, and by the Urbana Park District. The Urbana Park District has been closely following the CDC's guidelines on COVID-19 and has implemented precautions to keep patrons safe. All facilities, programs, events, and rentals are canceled. The building will be closed through April 2020, at which time the situation will be reassessed. All Urbana Park District offices are closed to walk-in visits, but staff will be available to answer phones, to handle registrations and refunds. For more information, go to urbanaparks.org.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Michael Johns and Tara Wicki of the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance. But first, disability news for the week of April 13th, 2020. Millions of Americans with disabilities are at risk of not receiving economic stimulus payments they're entitled to, according to advocates and lawmakers. Under the federal stimulus law approved in March, most individuals making less than $75,000 annually will receive $1,200 cash payments from the government starting this week. Generally, people will get payments automatically if they filed a tax return in 2018 or 19, or if they receive Form SSA 1099 for Social Security benefits, according to the Internal Revenue Service. But that's not the case for people receiving supplemental security income, as well as some veterans benefits who have been told they would need to file tax returns in order to access the money. Disability advocacy groups and at least 46 senators and 120 members of the House of Representatives have contacted the Treasury Department to ask the agency to forego its tax return requirement for those receiving SSI. On Friday, the IRS introduced a new tool on its website to allow SSI beneficiaries and other non-filers a quick way to register for the stimulus payments without filing a tax return. Bethany Lilly, Director of Income Policy at the ARC, said that it's especially burdensome for people with disabilities who rely on SSI to have to file a tax return now, since many free tax filing services are not operating because of the COVID-19 pandemic. She worries that people who are already at high risk for coronavirus may put themselves in danger by going to a library or other public place in order to access a computer to file a tax return so that they can get the stimulus payment. Lilly said, quote, they're sending these folks checks every month, so I don't know what additional info they would need. The point of this is to get cash into people's hands as quickly as possible, end quote. A Treasury Department spokeswoman said that the agency is working on this. Meanwhile, the Social Security Administration indicated that it's in talks with Treasury in an effort to address questions related to SSI beneficiaries and make the issuance of economic impact payments as quick and efficient as possible. Social Security did say that any money received through the cash payments would not be considered income and will not count as resources for 12 months. As schools remain closed due to COVID-19, U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos is determining whether or not they should be temporarily freed of some of their special education obligations. As part of the stimulus bill passed in March, DeVos was given 30 days to issue a report to Congress with recommendations for any waivers she believes are necessary under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to provide limited flexibility to states and school districts during the emergency. DeVos is not authorized under the law to issue waivers that would require further action from federal lawmakers, but the report could be a first step toward that end. Disability advocates are resoundingly opposed to opening up any waiver authority, which they say would be unprecedented. The Education Department has indicated that schools remain obligated to provide students with disabilities a free, appropriate public education, though how that's achieved may look different than it did before the pandemic. The agency said that it will offer schools flexibility where it can. Given the extraordinary circumstances, however, Sasha Podelsky, advocacy director at AASA, the School Superintendents Association, says that's not enough. With many school staff stretched thin while caring for their own children and limited access to technology and materials. Said Podelsky, quote, meeting all the requirements in the IDEA is impossible. We support narrow, time-limited, practical flexibility for meeting a few of the over 600 federal requirements in IDEA. She was clear that her group is not seeking any changes to free and appropriate public education. Quote, educators and administrators are doing everything possible to meet the needs of students with disabilities during this crisis, but the inability to complete evaluations that cannot be conducted virtually and to fill statutorily designated timelines in this crisis requires temporary flexibility for districts, end quote. Angela Morabito, a spokeswoman for the Education Department, said, quote, Congress requested the department provide recommendations on any waivers it believes necessary to respond to the pandemic. We are reviewing that request and will respond as appropriate. Secretary DeVos has been clear from the beginning that she is committed to ensuring all students, including students with disabilities, can continue their educations during this national emergency, end quote. In a new national survey, families of children with autism say that services have been severely disrupted because of coronavirus, but they are adapting and even finding some silver linings. More than 75% of families reported moderate to severe interruptions to their child's services and therapies, with speech therapy the most impacted. The disruptions were more pronounced for kids under age 5. At the time of the survey, which was conducted between March 20th and 30th, about a third of families said they were receiving remote services or therapies, and nearly half said they were seeing benefits. More than 62% reported their child with autism was feeling good overall, and about half of parents said the same of themselves. At the same time, however, nearly everyone who responded said the disruptions caused by coronavirus had negatively impacted the behavior of their child with autism, and 82% said it had affected their child's mental and emotional health. Parents also cited concerns about losing hard-won skills. Still, some parents reported seeing positives amid the challenges. One parent indicated that her child struggled at school socially and with communication, but seemed happier and calmer at home. Others said that online classes allowed their kids to move at a slower pace. Hundreds of parents said that breathing exercises, yoga, prayer, meditation, and other mindfulness exercises have been helpful in dealing with the situation. Maintaining a daily schedule was also crucial to preventing behavioral issues, the survey found. And finally, in this time of social distancing, life for many people with developmental disabilities has become largely sedentary. But Special Olympics and a professional wrestler are working to change that. The nonprofit has developed a series of fitness videos led by 6 Special Olympics athletes and featuring WWE star Becky Lynch that are designed to get people with disabilities moving while at home. The so-called School of Strength series promotes flexibility, strength, balance, and endurance through exercises with varying levels of difficulty ranging from jumping jacks to leg lifts and super squats. They are accompanied by recipes, games, a fitness tracker, and other health tips. Special Olympics indicated that the workout videos were in development before the organization canceled all of its events worldwide due to the pandemic. But now with everyone staying in, the videos are even more valuable, they said. Said Alicia Bazzano, chief health officer at Special Olympics, quote, the The School of Strength campaign is a fantastic asset that encourages our athletes to not only stretch their fitness goals, but stay committed to their health journeys during these tough times. And that's the news for this week. Are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nyswander, and this is Disability Beat. I'm joined today by two guests on the phone, both from the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance, a group that's been doing a lot of great stuff for several years now, and I'm happy to welcome Michael Johnson and Tara Wickey. Hello to both of you.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Tara, let me start with you. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell a little bit about the Alliance itself and what that is. And then that's for people who maybe have not heard you being interviewed on the show before, which you have. And then, Michael, I'm going to ask you to do the same. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the project that you're now working on. All right? So, Tara, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Tara Wickey, and I am the community organizer with the Alliance. And for those of you who don't know what the Alliance is, it's a network of self-advocacy groups and allies in the state of Illinois who care about self-advocacy. So we have 25 member groups that we work directly with. So each group has a point of contact that meets with them pretty regularly to help them through any challenges they may have. We have lots of events that go on all year, like our rally and our leadership training. And right now we're working on a really fun campaign called Operation Community Access. And Michael can tell you all about that.
So Michael, introduce yourself to the listeners first.
Hello, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm from the ARC of the Quad Cities. And I'm going, and like Tara said, we are working on a campaign called Operation Community Access. And it's about trying to get people with disabilities to have more choices in what they want to do during their day. Instead of doing just day programs, they can do different things like volunteer, music, and artwork.
Okay.
The Alliance is also working on a petition and they want people to sign this petition, and it's for Operation Community Access. And it will be given to Director Greg Benton in our upcoming rally in this summer.
When is your rally?
This summer.
Our rally is this summer. It's on June 28th.
So people have a little bit of time to prepare and get information about how to participate in that. So tell us a little bit more about what you're asking for as far as Operation Community Access. Obviously, lots of people with disabilities live in group homes and work in sheltered workshops, and so their lives are pretty isolated from the typical community. What is the Alliance thinking would be a better option? And if you want to give some specific examples, that would be great.
Yeah, so this all started in January of 2015 when we conducted a survey with self-advocates, and we asked them what they wanted to do during the day. And what we knew that was we already knew that some people really liked the workshop, developmental training, and some didn't. And so a lot of people were saying that they wanted more choice. And so we really needed to collect that data to have the numbers. And so when we got the surveys back, overwhelmingly, people said that they wanted choice. They wanted, you know, opportunities to do the workshop or not. They wanted opportunities, like Michael said, to do music, artwork, volunteer, take classes, you know, develop other skills, job skills. So, you know, that was kind of what we were hearing from people. And so we wanted to create a way to make that happen. And so the reason that we're doing petitions is because we know it's important, and we want to tell the state that it's important. And so with the flexible day services waiver requirement by the feds in March of 2017, everything has to change with the waiver anyway. And so we're hoping that we can kind of piggyback on that and make sure that self-advocates have their voice heard, so that when the requirements are met and things are changed in the waiver, their voice will be heard. So with petitions, we're hoping that people, anyone can sign a petition. You can access them on our website at selfadvocacyalliance.org. And basically you're just saying that you support flexible day services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to have more flexibility in choosing what they do during the day. Okay. So that's kind of what we're asking of individuals. But then we also have a form for allies to partner with us. So, you know, like the University of UIC signed one today. So anyone, any agency, group, local business can sign on and say that they support this.
I see. So how many signatures are you hoping to get on your list? How many allies do you hope to recruit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are hoping to get 1,000 petitions signed by individuals, and we have about 355 right now, so we're in good shape. Mm-hmm. We still have a couple months. And then in terms of allies, we're hoping to get around 40 to 50, and we're already at 15, and we just started with the allies. And so we do have some time, and I think it's really important, and it's really what self-advocates want. So, you know, there's no reason that we won't meet, you know, we'll definitely meet our numbers.
Yeah, we're excited. I think as people find out more and more about what the Alliance does, that there should be a lot more support
exactly.
for the work that you're doing. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about what your life is like right now and how you hope that this Operation Community Access could make it better.
Yeah. So right now I live in a group home, mm-hmm. and I work in a day program. And with this petition that we're having people sign, and with the, like Tara said, the waiver, I'm hoping that I will get more opportunities to work in the community or even volunteer. I mean, yeah, the day program is nice and whatnot. It's nice to go maybe once or twice a week to see my friends and, you know, catch up on gossip.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a good way to for me to get out in the community and learn different skills.
Right, and you want to get out there and
that I already have.
And you want to actually get out there and maybe earn some real money, because in a day
yeah.
program you're not making any money, or at least very, very, very little, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of a job do you think you'd like to do if you were able to find something that was the perfect job for you out in the community?
I like to work with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that could, you know, make me work with my hands and get me dirty.
You like getting dirty, huh? Well, that should qualify you for a lot of stuff, I would think. And what do you like to do in your free time? If you were going to volunteer for something, what would that be?
I like doing events for like the Speak Up and Speak Out rallies and stuff.
Yeah, those are fun.
So things like that of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for fun, what do you like to do?
For fun, I mostly read. I'm a big reader.
Okay.
I like to read and play sports.
What's your favorite sport?
Basketball and football.
Ah, okay. So you have a couple. That's great. So when you do the presentation of this petition to Director Fenton at the end of June when you have your rally, what do you hope he's going to do with it?
He's going to see these names and take it seriously,
mm-hmm.
and see that we really want this, not just because it's a waiver, but because we feel very strongly about this.
Terry, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, you know, I think he has a great point that, yeah, we do want him to care about this, and it is important. So what we know is that 13 states are already doing community access within their waiver. It's written into their waiver. So we know it's doable. We already have agencies in Illinois right now that are doing this very thing within the funding stream that currently exists. And it's really about creating this awareness within the culture of agencies and really listening to what self-advocates want, you know, and there are ways for this to be a priority. And so, you know, thinking creatively and strategically and making small incremental changes is really important. It's not just about, you know, it has to happen because of the waiver, but it should happen because this is what self-advocates want.
Absolutely.
And that's our job, is to make sure that their voice is heard. And, you know, they're the customer, they're the client. So, you know, the agency's responsibility is to provide that service.
And what this really is doing, in my mind, is it's changing the perception that the state of Illinois and providers as a whole do things for people with disabilities. They set up programs for them, and mm-hmm. they bus them to the programs, and that's the kind of model that's been set up. And what this Operation Community Access is doing is kind of turning that on its ear and saying, this is what people with disabilities want and need, and how can mm-hmm. we work together to provide that?
Uh-huh. Exactly. So, and I think even beyond that, it's not just what are we going to do with people during the day. It's how do we empower them to be self-sufficient, whether it's learning a new skill that's going to help them get a job, or it's something that's going to fulfill their emotional needs or their social needs. So really addressing more of a full life perspective, I think that's really what this is about as well. And how do we encourage agencies to take on that approach?
Yeah, and I think the other challenge is that there are a lot of people out there who that kind of support is going to be actually much less expensive for the state of Illinois over the long haul,
mm-hmm.
because people oftentimes are much more capable than they're given credit for. And it sounds like, mm-hmm. Michael, that you're one of those people. You're very capable of expressing yourself and doing lots of things, whereas there might be other folks out there who have a lot more needs, whether intellectual needs or communication needs or physical needs, but that the state and providers perceive that those folks might need to have a lot more expensive supports. Do you have any proposals to or answers to that concern?
Like you said, yes, there are a lot of people who are more than capable of being able to learn new skills, as like myself. And then there are some who can't, and they need that extra service. But for those who can, we would like to have that chance to show the skills that we do have, but also learn some new skills. And we're hoping that with this waiver and with this petition signing, that the director would see this and be like, and we'll talk to the governor and whatnot, and try to get this into motion so that people who do want to go and work in the community instead of in a factory, instead of a workshop, can have the opportunity to learn new skills to be, you know, a better person.
Great answer. Tara, you have anything else to add there?
I think just that we all know that people with disabilities are, you know, just over their lifespan, they're just put into boxes, and people like to assume, not like to, but people just assume what they can and can't do based on what they see in front of them. And I think this, you know, this goes to show that we really want people to have choice. We want them to say what their thoughts are, what their feelings are, and what they want, and they should be able to self-direct, especially during their day. So if they want to learn about art and they want to learn about music or they want to volunteer, they should be able to do that. And I think creating a marketplace where people don't have to just go to the agency that's nearest them, or because there's only one within 100 miles, you know, creating that, like, there should be some competition, I think, that, you know, agencies should have a little more accountability, and, you know, people should have more choice when it comes to what they're going to do during the day.
That is a really great point. And I think that there are a lot of folks out there in the community as a whole who aren't engaged in the disability community who totally don't understand that difference in the way services are provided. That oftentimes you live in an area, as a person with a disability, you live in an area that has one provider that does one or two things. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, you don't get anything.
And you just get what you get, right? That's kind of the way that the system works, I think. So it's like, well, be grateful for what you have because there's not a lot of money. You know, I think that's the narrative that we hear all the time.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, so where can people go to, again, give the website or whatever contact information people need for getting signed on to your petition and your list of allies?
Yeah. So you can go on our website, selfadvocacyalliance.org. And there's a form that you can fill out and you can sign the petition right online. And if your agency or a group, an advocacy group or agency, small business, anyone wants to become an ally, they can email me, tara@tara.advocacy@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today. Michael
Thank
Johnson
you.
And Tara Wicki of the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Hi, this is Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to 90.1 FM Champaign, WEFT.
Also, there's information on the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois' website, which is CFECI.org, for how you can get assistance if you need it for housing, for other issues that our local nonprofits can help you with. Based on the information that the governor sent out or talked about, there are some funds that have been set up for grants to go to local not-for-profits. So if you do need some help, they're encouraging people to get in touch with your local not-for-profit to get you some assistance, either with housing or money for food or whatever it is you might need. Joan Dixon from Community Foundation was on WEFT, and we do appreciate that.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hamelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today I am delighted to